Cole blinked as his blindfold was removed.
This is your chamber. You shall share it with your friends, the Ruth. There is a bell hanging by the door. You have but to ring it if there is anything at all you desire.
Cole struggled to keep a civil tongue in his head.
Thank you.
Cole gingerly pulled the bloodied square of silk from his chin as he entered his chamber. He was greatly relieved to find the room was above ground. The room was spacious and lit by numerous oil lamps set in the walls. Intricately tiled frescoes of the ocean floor populated by mermen with tridents and sea nymphs reclining in seashells tiled the walls. Persian rugs covered the floor beneath his feet. The ocean breeze stirred the curtains in the narrow window slit. Snorri sat on a couch, looking at nothing. Oleg gazed out the window dreamily.
Well, hello to you too, then.
The two of them stared at Cole as if he was very far away.
What the hell is wrong with you?
Snorri blinked sleepily.
Cole, your chin is bleeding. Did you cut yourself shaving?
No, I did not cut myself shaving. One of the Amazon guards did this to me, while the Empress lectured me on the history of the Silk Road and the unfortunate nature of my pedigree.
No, Hypatia would never do that.
I was not aware that you and the Empress were on a first-name basis.
Oleg's head tilted like a dog that has heard a sound it does not understand.
What?
The young Rus staggered and clutched the side of his face. Snorri blinked and rose.
Wake up, goddamn you! She's bewitched you both. While you were led away like moonstruck fools, Zuli and I were blackmailed into committing suicide tomorrow night. Reza and Orsini are willing to throw the three of us to the wolves for an antique breadbox. Look at you! You're like a couple of bollocks who have just come out from under the shears, and that Greek bitch still holds both of your shriveled sacks in the palm of her—
Cole saw stars as Snorri hit him. The room tilted crazily as he staggered and fell to one knee. Cole caught himself with his hands and shook his head to clear it. He saw red as he surged up at the Rus.
By God, I'll—
Cole's nose broke under Snorri's knuckles. His knees buckled, and he fell forward heavily onto his hands. Cole spat blood and stared at Snorri's boots. The bare-knuckle boxing champion of the Moscow garrison stood over Cole with his ham-like fists clenched.
We don't have to take that from the likes of you.
No, no, you do not.
Snorri raised his fist to strike Cole down. The Welshman drove the Rus all the way across the room. Tiles shattered as the big Rus crashed into the window nook and fell heavily to the floor. Cole caught movement in the corner of his eye and whirled. Oleg stood with a clay water jug cocked back in his hand. He looked back at the jug he held in his hand and then at Cole in horror.
No! Wait!
Cole turned back on Snorri with the idea of kicking his gold tooth down his throat.
No! Leave him alone!
Three women in costly silk gowns stood in the doorway. A short blonde ran into the room and hurled herself between Snorri and Cole. She dropped down and cradled Snorri's head in her lap.
Oh, Snorri, what has he done to you?
Her blonde curls fell all about Snorri's face as she brushed bits of tile and mortar off of him. She suddenly looked up and shook back the veil of her hair. Her blue eyes glared murder at Cole.
Heathen savage!
Hello, Ayante. You look beautiful.
Are you all right? Do you want me to have him impaled?
Oh, no. Cole is my best friend. He was helping me.
This blood-stained barbarian is your friend?
Well, I was the one who stained him. Oh, and the Empress was another.
Oh, yes, your audience with the Empress.
Snorri's eyes grew vague again.
Hypatia.
Be strong.
Snorri blinked back into clarity. Cole reached down and scooped up the square of silk the Amazon guard had given him. It was becoming rather rumpled and crusty. He pressed it to his face anyway. His nose and chin were bleeding freely. Ianthe's blue eyes looked Cole up and down with interest.
I had heard your behavior at the audience was absolutely insufferable.
Cole raised a swollen eyebrow.
You are Ianthe?
Yes, I am. And these are my friends, Tabitha, the Empress's handmaid of Thessaly, and Gide,
of the court of Ethiopia.
Cole looked at the two women. Tabitha looked like a dark-haired statue of Athena. Gide's tightly coiled copper hair fell in thick horsetails over the cinnamon-colored skin of her shoulders. Both women were absolutely beautiful. They looked Cole up and down like horse traders examining some strange breed they had never seen before. Cole nodded and lowered the bloody silk.
I am pleased to meet you. I am Cole, son of Math.
Gide's smile lit up the room.
You have green eyes.
I have just had to beat these two, Russ, because the Angeli bewitched them. If you smile upon me again, it is I who shall need beating. Ianthe, you are the woman Snorri was thrown out of the Varangian Guard over.
Why, yes, I am. Has Snorri mentioned me?
It was increasingly painful, but Cole managed to smile.
Often, and fondly.
Perhaps I have misjudged you. It is hard to make determinations about a man whose face has been so rearranged.
She gazed down at Snorri warmly.
The Strategos has honored the three of you with an invitation to dine with him tonight.
Who?
Sir Roger of Syracuse, the consort of the Angeli. You were introduced. You probably were not paying attention. The Empress has that effect. Sir Roger would like the three of you to join him in his chambers tonight, along with Orsini of Venice.
Tell the Strategos Oleg and Cole will be delighted.
But what of you?
Snorri put his hands behind his head and grinned up from her lap.
I will only go if you kiss me.
Ianthe bent over Snorri, and her blonde hair shrouded the both of them for long moments. She was blushing as she arose.
You have a new tooth.
Snorri smiled so that the gold glittered in his mouth.
Do you like it?
Very much.
Ianthe gathered her skirt about her as she rose.
You are expected within the hour of 9. I will inform the Strategos that you have accepted his invitation.
Oh, Ianthe so inclined her head at Tabitha and Gide, and they left the room.
Ha! What?
Dinner with the Strategos.
Snorri suddenly looked over at Oleg. The young Rus sat on the floor holding his bleeding mouth in pain. Snorri looked at him for a moment in sympathy, and then back at Cole.
So, what is this about you and Zuli committing suicide tomorrow night? Oh, well now, that was a damn fool thing to agree to.
Cole's knife froze. He held his skewered cube of grilled lamb in mid-dip over the honey pot and glared out of his swollen face.
Well, why don't you try your luck making deals with the Empress, then? I am sure you would drive a harder bargain than I.
Your friend had little choice in the matter, Yaroslav.
Sir Roger tossed back the remainder of his goblet.
Few of us do.
Snorri looked into his wine with a troubled brow at the mention of the Empress.
Was I truly that bad?
You would have willingly scraped the royal barge of barnacles with your tongue and then asked for seconds.
Snorri flushed. Oleg looked down at the tiles. Orsini smiled over the rim of his cup at the Strategos.
I told you Cole was a poet.
My pride is wounded enough. You do not have to rub salt into it.
Neither you or your young friend should feel ashamed, Yaroslav. Hypatia has broken better men than you and I with the arch of an eyebrow. Indeed, I will give you full credit, Celt. You are the only man to ever look into the eyes of the Angeli and demand the whereabouts of a dog. Even eunuchs and sodomites are completely in her thrall. I am impressed. Had it been a public audience before the court, I suspect she would have had you killed. It would have been a terrible blow to her power and prestige. You shook her, I can tell. She will remember you for a very long time. I wish I could shake her like that.
But you are Strategos of the Empire.
Indeed, son of Igor. I am Strategos. I command all the might of Trebizond, save for the 100 of the Royal Amazon Guard, for whatever that failing might is worth.
Snorri glanced about at the tapestries that covered the walls and the gold and silver they ate off of. Sir Roger, Orsini, Cole, Oleg, and Snorri all reclined on Roman-style couches circling a low table laden with choice foods and wines from a half-dozen lands. Snorri gestured about at the opulence with his wine cup.
Forgive my impertinence, Strategos, but from where I sit, you do not seem so badly off.
Sir Roger raised a distracted eyebrow as one of the servants went to the door unbidden. A staggeringly beautiful woman entered the chamber, accompanied by a pair of the Empress's Amazons. She looked like an older version of the Empress. A few silver strands gleamed out of the long black waves of her hair, and her chin was slightly square compared to the perfection of the Empress Hypatia. Just looking at her kindled desire in the depths of Cole's belly.
May I present the Empress's first cousin, Yulia? Her talents lie in healing, rather than fortune-telling, bewitchment, and affliction.
The woman ignored Sir Roger and turned purple eyes upon Cole.
It is my cousin the Angeli's wish that your face be made whole again.
I would appreciate that.
Yulia took his face in her hands.
To answer your question, Yaroslav, indeed, my situation could be much worse. My men and I have all that a warrior could ever wish for. Gold, richly appointed chambers, our choice of the finest steeds and equipage. I can have any woman in the Empire I choose, including the Empress herself, whenever the mood strikes me. Indeed, I have had Yulia come to my chamber a number of times.
Cole winced as Yulia's hands tightened on the bridge of his nose.
And yet?
Sir Roger took a deep draught of his wine and waved his empty chalice at Yulia.
And yet, whenever I start to have an interesting conversation with anyone other than a goddamned Greek, one of the Empress's relatives appears without fail to spy upon me.
Cole jerked as Yulia shoved his nose back in line. He blinked as a burning itch flowed through the break.
Why do you not leave?
Yulia went to Oleg's couch and put her palm across his bruised mouth.
Yes, Strategos, why do you not leave?
Because Hypatia is a witch of the First Order, as well as the Queen of Whores. She came to Syracuse and unmanned me. I followed her halfway across the world like a dog drooling after a piece of meat. I have tried to leave a dozen times, and every time I do, the witch looks into my eyes and I am lost. If I were a man, I would pluck out my eyes. It would be a fair trade to have my balls back.
The Strategos looked upon Cole long and hard.
I would pay you anything you asked if you would tell me how you defied her this day.
Cole had no idea what he could say to him. All he could offer was the truth.
She took my sword. It made me angry.
Sir Roger gazed deeply into his wine.
She took my sword long ago, and I gave it to her gladly.
Yulia rose.
You are the defender. You were not chosen out of a hat from amongst the available warlords of Europe. When Hypatia came of age to take the throne, she knew she must take a consort to defend the Empire. She looked deep into her power. She saw fire and blood on all the horizons, and she saw you, Roger of Syracuse, on your white horse, your sword on high, the banner of Trebizond flying behind you as you rode through the flames. You are the undefeated sword and shield of Trebizond, our hero.
Sir Roger reddened at Yulia's earnestness and gave Snorri a lopsided smile.
And you ask me why I do not leave.
Cole watched as Sir Roger drank more wine. He decided it was time to take a chance.
Strategos.
Yes?
May I ask you a question?
You have agreed to risk your life for us tomorrow night. Ask. I will answer.
What is in the box the Angeli gave Reza? And why is it worth my life?
Sir Roger sat up straight. Yulia tensed visibly.
That is the Walladeed's business, Cole, and mine. It will remain so until we choose otherwise.
I appreciate that, but tomorrow night it is I who will be swimming out to sea, not you. Nor was I speaking to you when I asked.
You have been paid, and paid handsomely, Cole. paid to be brave and fight well, both of which you have done admirably up to this point. You and I have shared confidences, so I will give you some advice. You have not been paid to snoop. That is Zuli's area of expertise. I suggest you leave such activities to her.
Sir Roger raised his hand.
I will tell you honestly, Cole. I do not know what Hypatia has given the wizard. The business of sorcery is something I prefer to stay well clear of. However, I will show you something. Come.
Cole rose and ignored Orsini as he followed the Strategos to a large window shuttered against the night wind. Sir Roger threw back the bolts and pulled the double shutters wide.
Do you see?
Cole looked out across the Imperial Palace. A white marble tower stood apart from the rest of the main keep. It was narrow, round, and windowless, except for a single shuttered slit at the top. The shutter on the window was brass, and it gleamed in the night as strange lights flickered around its frame. Above the window, a crenellated balcony surrounded a narrow, cone-like spire of brass. Cole watched as yellow and blue will-o'-the-wisp lights crawled down the spike of the spire. Some seemed to dance among the crenellations to fade away or disappear in a flash. Others split or stretched out, appearing to fill the cracks between the stones. Sir Roger pointed his finger at the tower.
That is where the Angeli women make their magics. On more nights than I can count, I have heard whispers and shrieks upon the wind, and seen the light of sorcery crawling in the dark. I think she gave me this chamber precisely so that I would always be witness to her power. I will tell you what little I can, Cole, since you risk your life tomorrow. I do not know what is in the box, but I do know that the box and whatever lies inside it are at the top of that tower. And I know also that Reza and the priest, Marius, are up in that tower this night. It is they who are making magics, not the Angeli. The sorcerer's swordswoman, Marta, guards the lower door.
Cole knew this, but he did not like hearing it.
Reza is a sorcerer, Cole. We knew that when we took the job. His sorceries have saved our lives. Now is not the time to be squeamish.
I advise you to listen to your friend and bend your mind to the task which lies ahead of you.
It was sound advice, and Cole knew it. Reza had saved their lives. But the mission before him was so vague in nature and so desperately dangerous, he no longer knew what to think, and looking out the window at the tower left his stomach feeling cold and jittery despite the food and wine.
Something is wrong.
Cole kept his thoughts to himself as he returned to his couch.
I apologize for my impertinence, Orsini. You know that you have my deepest respect, but a man cannot help but be curious.
Oh, it is perfectly understandable.
The dwarf nodded and poured more wine. He seemed glad to put the subject behind them. Sir Roger seemed glad as well.
The Angeli has said you are to indulge in our hospitality tonight. What is your desire? Dancing girls? Jugglers? Perhaps magics of a lighter nature? The court has recently retained an Armenian illusionist who can conjure images of a most remarkable nature.
Actually, I have an acquaintance I would like to rekindle, and I thought I might take Cole and Oleg along with me.
Ianthe and her friends, Gide and Tabitha.
The same.
Very well. For me, a quiet evening in. Perhaps Orsini of Venice would be kind enough to help me finish the wine and tell me the latest news of Europe.
Nothing would please me more, Strategos.
Snorri rose and snapped to attention.
By your leave, Strategos.
Oleg bowed clumsily. Cole bent a knee as he had learned in Paris. Sir Roger raised a hand towards the two Amazons standing by the door.
See to it that they have whatever they need.
The Amazons opened the doors and followed the three of them out. Snorri was quiet as they were escorted back to their chamber. At the door, the tall, red-headed Amazon smiled in a friendly fashion.
Is there anything you require?
Yes. May I have pen and paper and a pot of ink?
It shall be brought to you.
The woman blushed slightly and pointed at Cole's belt.
May I have my kerchief back?
Cole looked down at the blood-stained square of silk he had thrust into his belt. He plucked it out guiltily.
I am afraid I have ruined it.
Well, my mother gave it to me. I would still like to keep it.
Cole handed it over and watched the two Amazons march away.
What the hell are you doing prying into Razor's affairs?
I am the one swimming out to sea tomorrow night. I want to know what this is all about.
I am trying to see what I can do about that, and I don't need you raising suspicion by asking stupid questions.
What the hell does that mean?
Never mind. The less you know, the better.
Cole glared. No one seemed to think he could be trusted with anything except taking insane risks. Snorri clapped him on the shoulder.
Forget about it. Come. Ayanthi and her friends await us. At the palace baths.
The image of Gide, handmaid of Ethiopia, lying in a scented bath waiting for him, filled Cole's mind with startling clarity.
Worry about tomorrow, tomorrow, Cole. Tonight, you have other concerns.
They are awaiting you?
Yes.
In the baths?
Indeed.
All three of them?
Indeed, yes. Three of them, three of us. It will all work out very nicely.
Oleg's jaw dropped.
What about Zuli?
What about her?
Well, you and she.
We are not married, you know. She knows about Ayanthi and me.
Aren't you afraid she might find another man for the evening?
Nope. Tonight, she is with the Empress.
What is she doing with the Empress?
What do you think she is doing with the Empress, huh?
Cole suddenly understood what Snorri was implying, and the image of it blurred his mind.
You know, Cole, you have traveled half the length of civilization from west to east, and still you have the morals of a bumpkin from Wales.
Cole blushed against his will. The Russ folded his arms across his chest.
Oh, it is quite a thing to think of, I admit. But you are not thinking of Zuli and the Empress, tempting as that is. Nor are you thinking of Gide lounging naked in a bath scented with oil. You're thinking about Marta, aren't you?
Cole flushed to the roots of his hair.
Paper and a pot of ink. What are you going to do? Spend the night by yourself writing love poetry?
Cole could not make up his mind whether to kill Snorri or crawl under the bed and hide. A knock at the door saved Cole the choice. Oleg opened it to find a steward in dark blue livery, holding a silver tray laden with a sheaf of clean parchment, an inkpot, two quills, a sharpening knife, and a small bowl of sand.
Thank you.
Snorri nudged Oleg with his elbow.
Come, Oleg. It is for the best if Cole stays in his chamber anyway. It will keep him out of trouble, and he needs to conserve his strength. He has a big day ahead of him. Let us, you and I, go join the girls at the bath.
Oleg glanced at Cole and then Snorri.
But
what, Oleg?
What of Gide?
Ah, normally I would take care of that, but this night I must give Ayanthi my full attentions. Cole's loss is your gain. I would make the most of it if I were you.
But then what of Tabitha?
I suspect she will help.
Me? Both?
Oleg, do you understand what I told Cole about Zuli and the Empress?
Yes.
So, ask Tabitha and Gide to play Empress and the Thief for you. Now pay attention to the details. You might learn a few things that will serve you the rest of your life.
The slowest, stupidest, happiest grin spread across Oleg's face from ear to ear.
Good lad.
Cole watched the two Russ walk out the door. He started as Snorri's head suddenly reappeared around the corner.
Moon calf.
Cole nearly hurled the tray at him. The steward looked back at Cole nervously.
Is there anything else?
Have you any wine from Cyprus?
Yes, sir. Commander Rhea, from the city of Limassol.
Bring me a cup, if you will.
Cole looked at the writing instruments before him and decided the two Russ could go straight to hell. Then he grinned and silently wished them both luck. Snorri was right. Cole's thoughts were about Marta. His muse was speaking in his ear, and Cole could see the lines begin to form in his mind.
Make that ajar.
Cole blinked up into the rain. The night was as black as pitch. The rain fell straight out of a windless sky in a heavy, ceaseless shower upon the rocky shore. Across the harbor, the great lamps of the junk shone like beacons in their shades of waxed red paper. Cole drew off his soaked tunic. Even with Zuli, Marta, and six Amazon guards at arm's length, there was no need for modesty. It was the darkest, wettest night in the world. Snorri's hand gripped Cole's shoulder. The Russ pulled him aside.
Listen to me. You do not have to do this.
Now is a fine time to tell me that, then.
Now is the perfect time. There are only six of the Empress's Amazons watching us. Marta will not draw steel against us, and neither will Zuli. I have Oleg hiding in the rocks less than a stone's throw away. He has a spear and shield for you. Say the word, and we cut our way out of here.
And go where?
Listen, Apt is with us. He has sold his goods at a profit and taken on new cargo. His crew is back aboard the Olga. Nothing holds him here. He remembers the way you fought when his ship was attacked. He likes you. I sent a message to him through Ianthi. Apt says if we can get to his ship without being caught, he will take us aboard and weigh anchor this very night. I say we run. Now.
I cannot.
Hypatia has your sword, is that it? It is the most beautiful blade in the world, Cole, but it is not worth dying for. Let the witch have it.
That is not it, and you know it.
Well, Marta is as fine a woman as a man could want, I grant you that, but corpses do not steal kisses. You will have even less of a chance with her if you're dead.
I gave my word.
Damn your word! You gave your word to a Persian sorcerer and a Greek witch who do not give a good goddamn whether you live or die. It is a fool's errand. If they had told you that the fabled pearl of the ocean was on that ship and you were to steal it, that would be one thing. It would be suicide, but at least it would make some kind of sense. But you were sneaking aboard and poking about without even knowing what you were looking for. You will die for nothing.
I gave my word to Zuli. She risked her life for me. I cannot let her swim out to that ship alone. You would do the same, Snorri. Admit it.
My God, I do not like this. I do not like it at all.
Neither do I.
It is time to make ready.
Cole could barely make out the pale gleam of Zuli's flesh in the darkness. She grasped his hand and slapped something into it. Cole found he held a jar.
What is it?
Rendered grease, mixed with indigo dye.
Cole turned the jar over in his hand dubiously, even though he could not see it.
What is it for?
It will make the swim easier and keep out the cold. It also makes you very hard to hold on to if guardsmen seize you. The grease is rendered so that it will not smell. The indigo will make us harder to see. Marta, come here!
The swordswoman blindly picked her way across the rocks and sand.
What is it?
Grease coal.
I will not!
You may grease me instead, if you like. I would not mind so much.
I will grease Cole.
Snorri, will you assist me?
Oh, indeed.
Come then, let us give them some privacy.
Everywhere except the palms of his hands, Marta, and the bottoms of his feet.
Marta was a rigid shape in the dark. Cole shivered in the rain and awkward silence.
I did not know this was part of the preparations.
I know that.
You need not.
Kneel down.
Cole dropped to one knee. Marta's hand groped out for a moment and found his head.
Here.
Their fingers fumbled together a moment, and Cole took the jar in both hands. Marta dipped her fingers into the grease. She ran her fingers through Cole's hair. The thick grease pasted his hair down around his head like a helmet.
Close your eyes.
Marta smoothed the grease across his face and neck and ran her thumbs around his ears. Cole felt the rough calluses on her hand from holding swords and pulling bows. Her hands lingered on his chin for a moment, and then tapped his collarbones.
Turn around.
Cole stood, and Marta painted wide swaths of the grease down his back with her palms.
I do not like what they are making you do.
Neither do I.
Cole?
I?
I want you to know that if you try to escape, I will not try to stop you.
Cole felt a tiny star shining on him out of the rain and blackness.
That means a great deal to me, Marta. More than you know.
But if you do, I warn you, Reza will kill you. Horribly. Even if you get away from the shores of Trebizond, even if you make it all the way back to your Snowdon Mountain in Wales, Reza will see to it that you die. Even if it takes him decades. You saw what he did to Zatko. And think carefully. It is not just Reza you will be crossing, but the Empress as well. Cole, when the Amazon cut you, what became of the kerchief she gave you?
She retrieved it after my face was healed. Why?
They have your sword, Cole. And now they have your blood. I know something of these things. They have enough to make terrible magics against you.
I'd thought as much. When the Empress told me she could see to it that I died if I was captured, the thought of escape left my mind. Down in the dungeon, I made up my mind to die with honor.
Cole looked out across the water at the blood-red light of the ship's lamps.
Now, it is in my mind to succeed. I will board that ship of Cathay. I will return to tell the tale. I will hold my sword in my hand again.
I like hearing you talk like that.
Snorri says that I am lucky. I am starting to believe I am.
Marta seized Cole's shoulders and spun him about.
Never say you are lucky. Let others say it about you, but never claim it yourself. No god loves it. It is the worst kind of hubris and the death of heroes. Say you are brave, say you are bold, but never say you are lucky. Do not tempt fate. Not on a night like this.
Marta's passion startled him. Cole squared his shoulders and gravely addressed the sky.
I am a luckless man, foolish and dull. I will probably be eaten by sharks before I ever reach the junk, and deservedly so.
Better.
Cole grinned in the dark.
But my luck turned the day I met you.
He could not see her face in the dark, but he knew she was blushing.
You are lucky there are no sharks to speak of in the Black Sea.
Cole vainly tried to make out her face.
Marta?
What?
What is inside Reza's box?
I swear to you, Cole, I do not know.
Would you tell me if you did?
If I had been forsworn to keep it secret, I would tell you as much, but I do not know its contents. There are many things Reza does not tell me. I know my place, and what is in the box is my master's business, not mine, until he chooses to make it so.
I appreciate your honesty.
I want there to be no lies between us.
Marta knelt and began greasing Cole's legs.
Blondine told me about the Ethiopian woman at court, Gide.
And?
I want you to know, I do not mind if you and she are... I mean...
I thought you wanted there to be no lies between us then. I did not go to Gide last night. I spent the night alone in my chamber.
Alone?
I made something for you instead. It is in my harp case. If I do not come back, I want you to have it.
Cole.
But I think I will come back and give it to you personally.
You missed the spot.
I did not miss any... Oh.
Here. We cannot have that thing of yours flopping about shining like a glowworm.
Cole found a length of fabric in his palm.
What do I do with this?
You wear it.
How?
Stick your arms out.
Cole went up on his toes with a wince as Zuli pulled the fabric up between his legs. She pulled it up snugly between his flanks and then wrapped it around his waist twice. She pulled it down and around again and then knotted it at his hips.
There.
For modesty?
No, to hold your knife.
I lost my dagger fighting the Saracens on board the Olga.
Here.
Cole felt the knurling of the horn handle.
This is Snorri's sax.
Yes, and I want it back.
Thrust it through the waist of your breech clout, unless you intend to swim with it in your teeth.
Cole secured the knife at his waist.
Here, take this as well.
They fumbled for each other's hands. He found he held Marta's hand axe.
If you have to cut a rope on board the ship, it will be faster than the knife, and better if you have to kill a guard. Many a man has still raised a ruckus with his throat cut. No man makes a noise with a hatchet in his head.
It still shocked Cole to hear Marta speak such things.
Thank you.
Let us go.
Marta grabbed Cole's arm and pulled him close.
Cole.
Yes?
Marta's face came close. Her lips pressed into his cheek and slid a little on the grease as she stood on tiptoe.
For luck.
Now, Cole!
Marta's hands squeezed Cole's shoulders and fell away. His right cheek tingled from her lips. His shoulder still felt the grip of her hands. The rain ran off his greased flesh. The water closed in over Cole's feet. It was not as cold as he had feared. Cole's stomach tightened as the cool water reached the tops of his thighs. His feet left the bottom, and his arms stroked.
You know the breaststroke.
The what?
You can swim with your head above water, yet without paddling about like a dog.
I can swim on my back as well, and under the water.
Indeed. How long have you been swimming?
Since my father threw me into the tarn on my fifth birthday.
Cole strained his eyes, but he could not see Zuli even as a dark outline. The junk ahead of him was an island of red light in the black. Zuli swam astern of the junk and carefully kept out of the glow of the lamps. As they rounded the ship, the great anchor rope suddenly silhouetted itself against the light. Zuli kicked towards it. Cole followed. They clung to the rope. The steering oar was a vast blade of wood a few yards away, and the stern deck hung out over the water like a balcony. Zuli's hand suddenly clamped on Cole's shoulder. Cole instinctively sank in the water up to his eyes. A figure had appeared at the stern. The man wore a wide straw hat that shadowed his face and held a spear as tall as he was. Its glittering blade was long and curved sinuously like a tongue of steel flame. The man leaned out over the rail and suddenly peered down into the water. Cole's hands tensed on the anchor rope. It seemed like the man was staring directly at him. Cole's heart hammered in his chest as he took in the man's exotic features. After a long moment, the man leaned back and looked up into the sky. The guard pushed his hat back and stuck out his tongue. He stood for a moment and let the rain fall upon his tongue, and then smiled at himself self-consciously. Pulling the night watch was as boring for the men of Cathay as it was in the West. Cole relaxed as the man pulled his hat back over his head and resumed his sentry walk along the rails. A tiny wake crested around Cole's neck as Zuli pulled herself up on the rope. She cupped her hands against the thick rope and viced the bottom of her feet against it as she pushed her way up one span of limbs at a time. Cole watched as she scaled the rope and disappeared over the side of the ship. Long moments passed. A dark arm slid over the side and beckoned him in the glow of the stern lamp. Cole gripped the anchor rope and started climbing. Zuli's orders not to grease his palms or the bottoms of his feet suddenly made a great deal of sense. Cole heaved himself up the rope and stretched out to grab the rail. His feet left the rope. Cole hung by his hands for a moment and scanned the deck. No one was about. Cole's biceps tensed with the strain of holding himself aloft as he looked back and forth. The little aisle formed by the starboard side of the junk was abandoned. Zuli was nowhere to be seen. Several coils of ship's rope the size of barrels lay stacked on the deck. A dark hand beckoned to him from the pool of shadow between the coils. Cole hooked a heel over the rail and rolled to the deck. He scooted over to the coils of rope in a crouch. Zuli knelt against the wall of the cabin. She brought her hand up before his face and pointed up at the top of the cabin they leaned against. Cole nodded and made a stirrup out of his hands. Zuli stepped into it. Zuli vaulted up and disappeared onto the roof. Cole waited long seconds. Zuli's head appeared. The whites of her eyes and her teeth gleamed out at him. Cole grasped the eave of the cabin and pulled himself up. The two of them stood atop the junk. The four great masts stood like trees with their sails furled. A smaller cabin rose before them. Zuli crept towards one of its shuttered windows in the dim glow cast from the lamps beneath them. She pressed her head against the shutter and stood motionless for a long time. She beckoned Cole forward with a finger. She pressed her lips against his ear as he crouched beside her.
Give me the knife.
The blade seemed bright as a beacon as Cole drew it. Zuli took it and slid it between the shutter doors to work the latch. She moved with agonizing slowness for long moments.
Open it.
Cole opened the shutter. Zuli wriggled through the window. Her arm slipped out and beckoned Cole to join her. He awkwardly managed to snake his frame through. The glow of the lamps outside barely broke the blackness of the room.
I heard what you said.
Cole tensed.
About what?
About coming tonight. For me,
Zuli's tongue slipped into his mouth for a startling moment before she pulled away. Her finger pressed his lips closed before he could speak.
Thank you.
What do we do now?
Ships are the same the world over. The lower down you go, the less interesting things are. The most valuable cargo will be stored in the captain's cabin. Everything interesting is at the top.
So whatever it is we are looking for should be right below us.
It should be.
Cole drew Marta's hand axe.
Let us go below then.
Wait.
Zuli's form crouched in the darkness.
What is it?
There is a hatch in the floor. I am rubbing some of the grease from my arm onto the hinges.
It occurred to Cole with great clarity that Zuli could see in the dark. Zuli lifted the hatch and slid down a ladder without using the steps. She waved and Cole followed. They found themselves in a cabin lit by a pair of lanterns. There were four cots with sea chests beneath them. Suits of foreign armor hung from pegs on the walls. Zuli examined a table covered with charts. Cole stared at Zuli's naked, indigo-dyed body in the lamplight. Zuli ignored his gaze and swiftly searched every inch of the cabin.
This would have been the captain's cabin. Four now inhabit it.
Zuli took a lantern down from its hook and flicked its hood up and down with her thumb. She went to the door and listened. She cracked the door and peered out.
Come.
They slid out of the cabin and found themselves in a narrow corridor. Zuli crept to a door and put her ear against it. She cocked her head and her eyes narrowed. Cole listened. It was like no language he had ever heard. Zuli's eyes flew wide in her dark, painted face.
Run!
Calls of alarm rang throughout the ship as Zuli and Cole reached the door at the end of the corridor.
It's locked!
Cole whirled about as the door down the hall flew open and a man leapt out. Cole froze. It was not a man. Tusks thrust up from a shovel-like lower jaw. The nictitating slits of its nose flew open and shut. Great, slanted, cat-like yellow eyes flared wide as it looked at Zuli and Cole. Only a short apron of gray wool covered its hairless green flesh. The hobgoblin held a huge dagger blade set at a right angle into a wooden haft like a battle axe. It thrust its knife axe at Zuli accusingly. Cole hurled his hand axe. The wooden handle slammed between the creature's eyes and it reeled backward. Cole grabbed Zuli's hand.
Move!
The two of them ran back down the corridor. Zuli yanked Cole's arm as they passed a ladder.
Down!
Cole leapt down the hole in the deck and nearly broke his ankle as he landed. Zuli landed on top of him and bounced to her feet.
Move!
Where?
Zuli pressed Snorri's knife into his hand.
There were shutters in the hull! Pick a door!
A half-dressed Cathayan burst forth with a heavy curved sword in his hand. The Cathayan raised his sword and Zuli dove at his ankles. Cole lunged in and blocked the sword blow with his knife. The Cathayan tumbled to the deck. Cole stomped on his belly and Zuli slammed her lantern against the side of the Cathayan's head. She leapt up and ran past into the room.
No shutter!
Joe!
An armored man slid down the ladder behind them, followed by another. Cole ran past Zuli to the door at the end of the corridor. The room was unlit, but the light from the corridor revealed a large cabin full of boxes and barrels and the hope of a shuttered window along the hull.
Here!
Zuli skidded into the room. Cole shut the door and shot the bolt. Zuli opened her lantern and ran to the shutter.
It has been nailed shut!
Cole shoved a barrel against the door. A spear point suddenly punched through the wood. Cole ran to the shutter. It was an inch thick and had been sealed with iron nails for the voyage. Cole seized a small cask and raised it above his head, smashing it against the shutter. The cask burst its sides and Cole spat as grit showered him and the smell of brimstone filled his nostrils. Black powder stuck to the grease paint that covered him. Cole hurled the shattered cask away and sought about for something heavier. More spear points pierced the door. They bored and twisted, and shafts of light began to bleed in from the besieged portal. Zuli knelt and took some of the spilled powder and sniffed at it. Cole found another cask and hefted it. He stepped back and ran at the shutter. The shutter burst apart. Pieces of it hung by the nails while the rest fell into the sea. Zuli shone the lamp all around the cabin at the casks and crates. Large bundles were racked in rows that reached the ceiling. She looked again at the powder beneath her feet.
Go! Now!
But—
Go!
Cole clambered up into the window and looked back. Zuli raised the lantern high as if she were going to throw it.
Zuli!
Cole slapped his hands together and turned his fall into a dive. He punched into the sea and water closed over him. As he turned to the surface, Zuli's hand seized his hair and pulled him back downward. The water above lit up in lurid orange, and Cole's eardrum seemed to meet in the middle of his skull. Zuli released his hair and swam ahead. Cole's lungs strained, but he stayed under the water and followed her. Her head broke the surface for a second, and she dove down again. Cole barely drew half a breath when a great weight pushed him down, and he flailed in a tangle of limbs. The surface lit up in brilliant orange again. Cole found himself face to face with a hobgoblin. He shoved his feet against the creature and propelled himself away. As he flailed backwards, the hobgoblin slowly sank. Its head hung at an angle. It was stunned or dead. Cole kicked up to the surface. The junk was afire from stem to stern. Flames crawled up its shattered masts. Cole shook his head and dove again. He kicked down and wrapped an arm around the hobgoblin's neck. It did not respond. Cole strained to pull it to the surface.
Zuli!
The hobgoblin was heavy beyond endurance. Cole kicked and stroked with his free arm as he went underwater again. The weight suddenly lessened. Zuli was by his side and held the hobgoblin's arm.
Swim!
They kicked out with their burden between them. Their progress was painfully slow, but there was no pursuit.
Snorri!
Snorri! Oled! Cole! Zuli! Snorri!
A rowboat pulled out of the darkness. As it neared, Cole saw Marta at the prow with an arrow laid across her bow.
Cole!
Zuli caught the gunwale. Snorri froze in alarm as he looked at their burden.
Baldur's beard! Pull it in!
The load lifted, and Cole clutched the side of the boat. Oleg pulled Zuli aboard. Cole pulled himself up feebly. Snorri grabbed his arm and heaved him in. Cole flopped down into the bottom of the boat beside Zuli and the dead hobgoblin. Oleg dragged the corpse to the back of the boat. Zuli spooned into Cole and shivered. Snorri threw a blanket over the both of them. Cole hugged Zuli as his heart gradually slowed. Snorri and Oleg bent their oars. Marta held the tiller as they rowed into the sheltering darkness.
That's a hobgoblin you have there, Cole.
Aye, it is that.
What was a hobgoblin doing aboard the Cathayan junk in the Black Sea?
Cole clenched his teeth to keep them from chattering.
Giving orders.